done.
Hello. I am Zach, and this is Leo.
This is Wet Leo.
Yeah. Do you want to introduce our guests today?
Just think
it's funny when you say their names.
Okay. So we've got Fox Fisher, and we've got Owl.
Owl. Two syllables in owl. Cool. So we are here at the farm, which I think we all agree is like.
Pretty awesome place.
Best pub in Brighton.
We spend most of our evenings.
I mean, awkward. But yeah, the best roast dinner. But I almost don't want to promote it too much, otherwise we won't be able to get in here for one.
It's a terrible place.
Horrible people. Whoa. Not friendly at all. Yeah. Cool. So you guys are writers and filmmakers.
Activists.
And activists.
What aren't you?
Piers Morgan slayers, I've got written down. And just generally guys that are smashing it that are making the rest of us look bad, I think.
Yeah.
They're like, well, yeah. Cool, so we're just going to do 10 questions over tea. Cheers, guys.
Lovely, warm tea, healthy.
Try not to burn. Cool. We'll just chat through and just get to know each other a bit. So yeah. Question one.
Are you ready?
No.
You're like, how did you guys meet?
Wow.
Well, that's a good story.
How long do we have? You can have the short version or the long version. Do you want the short version first?
I want the romantic version. That's what
we
I
want. The truth.
You've got to have the truth.
So, I guess I'll start. So you can jump in at any point. So, a few years ago, I was working for Transgender Europe, which is a large organisation called TGEU, and they're based in Berlin. They do all sorts of great work in Europe and beyond for trans people. And they contacted me, and they wanted some films to be made. So I went up there and went to Berlin, chatted to them about that, and then went to Bologna for the,
It's like a 10-year anniversary.
It's a 10-year anniversary, so I was there to kind of collect. There's so many cool people that go to this event, you know, these conferences.
Yeah.
And what people didn't tell me about these conferences is that they're massive hookup places. So
I just don't know how you didn't know that.
Well, I had no idea, and I'd been single for like 3 years, and like completely, you know, not even dating, kind of single, just not interested, getting on with my work.
And I could go to conferences for like a year.
That's right.
A conference expert.
Yeah. Yeah. So our paths had not crossed until this point. So Al was on my hit list of people to interview.
Right. I wonder where we were going.
And we got on really, really well, didn't we? So do you want to pick
up? Yeah, I mean, it was just a bit funny because I had recently broken up with someone, and I was kind of just like, I want to go to this conference, have a nice time, have some ice cream, have some gelato.
Is that what they call it?
Ice cream. And I just wanted to hang out with my friends and just chill. I didn't plan any romantic expedition.
It's always when it happens.
That's when you find it, when you're not looking.
And we kind of connected, and I said to my friends that Fox is really nice, I might like to get to know them better. So they decided to give Fox shots of vodka and say it was from me without consulting me first.
That sounds like something that we would do to you.
Yeah, so your friends kept on shuffling up to me, didn't they? And they'd be like, oh, my name's Haber, you don't know me, but this shot of bison vodka is from Ugla. And I was like, okay, so I kind of like, you know, raise up a toast and drink it. And after about four of these shots, you turned up, didn't you?
And I was just like, I only heard about this now, but my friends have apparently been giving you shots in my name. So I just decided to come over.
I was a little bit disappointed at first, because I was like, oh no, you're not buying me drinks. But actually, they only did it because...
Yeah, they knew that I liked you, so that was why they were doing it. I was kind of like, I wasn't pursuing it, because I was just like, I'm just going to chill, like, this is going to be cool. But then it ended up with, I don't know. Yeah,
I could stop you there because actually there is a book.
It's about to get X-rated.
And there is a book by Gina Rush called Queer Sex, and there is a chapter about how we met in that. So
it will give you all the dirty details, which we will.
We are buying that book later.
I will slightly spare you with all the details, but it ended up with us, with me missing my flight back to Iceland.
No way.
I didn't do it on purpose because no one believes me. Everybody was like, you missed a flight on purpose. But I missed it, and then I was in Bologna with no flight home, and I was like, how the fuck am I going to get back?
Yeah.
And then Fox said, well, why don't you just check if there's a flight to Gatwick, and you can go from there. So we went to the airport, and I booked a flight at the airport, at the desk, and then went to Brighton with Fox, and I stayed there for like a week.
So really, you wanted out on hometown.
And I've basically been in Brighton since. I think the longest I've been from Brighton since is like 2 weeks or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
It is one of those places, Brighton, where once you come, you can't.
This is super weird, but me and my fiance met in Berlin, and I proposed at Gatwick Airport.
Oh,
she missed her flight as
that's
well.
Amazing.
We'll chat more about this after.
Do you
want to
tell them how we met, baby? Or is that all right?
Did we meet? Yeah, I'm like, God, we were drunk, so many shots of Burger King, just me buying myself shots.
Yeah, me carrying you out.
Yeah,
that is definitely a story for off camera.
Cool. Right, on to the next question.
Yeah, you're all yours.
It's got an L on it, so I know that I'm meant to ask.
L for Leo.
You can tell. Yeah, you can tell. I'm professional. What was your coming out experience like? Because it varied slightly different from ours, you coming out as non-binary. So is there any sort of like difference, or you know, was it like a
How many times did you come out?
This is only one question.
Yeah. Because it's so true, isn't it? With you know people like us, I suppose. Because I obviously came out as, well not obviously, but I came out as gay before I came out as trans, and then I was like, actually that doesn't really fit, so
so then I
came out as trans, and that took a lot of, I felt like a lot more guilt and shame about being trans, I think, even though I really struggled with the whole gay thing as well, and also that didn't fit, so I felt disconnected, but I think I was the one holding me back the most, because once I voiced it, I felt like it was so much easier to just get on with things.
Like it's more real.
Speaking to my soul right now.
But you came out when you were like 17.
I came out when I was 17 in Iceland, and like by that point there was nothing in the media about trans people at all.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to just carve my own path in Iceland, and it was quite liberating when I came out. But I originally just came out as a trans woman, because the word non-binary, people being non-binary, wasn't really spoken of.
Yeah.
So I just came out as a trans woman because I was like, well, if I'm going to have to choose, then I'm more on the women's side for sure. So I kind of just went with that for a while. And then eventually, I think maybe 5 years later or something, I started talking about being more non-binary. But I guess for me, it doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah.
It's just that I feel more non-binary than anything. But I... express myself quite femininely. People assume I'm a woman when they see me, and that's fine with me.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of don't care that much as long as people don't see me as a bloke.
Right.
So that's really all I care about.
Yeah. I came out as genderqueer, I think, before, because when I came out about 8 years ago, that seemed to be the terminology that people were talking about. So I tried to come out as genderqueer when I was on a mainstream documentary called My Trans Summer. That was out in 2011. Kind of,
I watched that.
Yeah, it was like it's almost 10 years. Since
it was a long time ago.
But yeah, I mean, back then, we were making YouTube videos, and it just didn't feel like people really understood what it was to be trans. So when I came out as trans, I thought, God, there's so much work to be done on this. So that's one of the reasons why I said yes to doing this TV show. But then when I started to talk about being genderqueer, they kind of like put down the cameras, and the producer said, "Fox, I just don't think that the audience, the Channel 4 audience, is going to understand this at all. So could you simplify your experiences?" So I literally had to say the same phrases that I use in order to access medical treatment. You know, I was born in my body, I should be born a boy.
Like those words. Kind of thing.
Those words that are kind of clunky, that don't really...
That's so shit.
I know.
And this is supposed to be a documentary about your experience.
But they're just molding your experience.
Yeah.
On you.
We'll get our camera people going, can you re-say that, Leo? Because we can't understand your accent.
Yeah, I have to mold my accent sometimes.
Terrible.
A few more cups of tea and you'll go really normal.
Yeah, cups of tea.
Yorkshire tea. Cool. Do you ever suffer prejudice as non-binary people from trans people, from binary trans people?
That's such a good question.
Yes.
I'm quite proud of that question.
Do
tell.
Non-binary people experience discrimination from within the community, for sure.
It kind of comes from people who, it's usually, in my experience, it's usually either older people who've fought really, really hard to be seen as a man or a woman.
Yeah.
And to them, it almost seems like you're putting down their experience. You almost see it as a threat to their experience that you're saying that gender isn't that simple. So people almost see it as an attack on their own experience and what they fought
right.
for so hard. Or it's also young people who are trying to conform
yeah.
in a really stereotypical way. Like, you know, young, especially I've seen on YouTube, especially like these young YouTubers or trans guys, and they're just really stuck on this idea that trans people have to fit in a certain mold and they all have to feel this type of dysphoria and all have to have these type of surgeries. And it's just this level of conformity, which is
so hypocritical.
It's quite
yeah.
hypocritical because
yeah.
you're gatekeeping an experience that has been gatekept forever.
Yeah.
And who are you to police someone's gender? I mean,
yeah.
it's so bizarre.
Yeah. yeah. Especially as a trans person who's, you know, been your whole experience has been policed by other people.
Yeah, so like police other people's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people need to look at it more on like an individual basis rather than like a reflection of themselves.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like people being
yeah.
non-binary doesn't mean that we want people to stop being a man or woman. It
yeah.
just means that we just want to be ourselves. And
how hard is it to just fucking respect each other?
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. quite difficult.
Anyway, that's not, I'm going to get too wound up with it. your question.
On to the next
yeah.
question. But just on a really positive note,
yeah.
I do think that things are changing for non-binary people, and I think it helps to have just people coming out in general who aren't from the trans community who are coming out as non-binary. So I'm talking about people like Sam Smith,
Jonathan Van Ness,
Young Blood. But I think it helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It brings the conversation, you know, to the forefront.
Yeah.
And it's in the mainstream now, which is wasn't just a few years ago.
Yeah,
exactly.
Definitely. Just
largely thanks to you guys.
Yeah,
as well.
Paving the way. Should I say paving the way?
What did you say?
Paving the way. Cool. Well, we did. We had our research team do a bit of research, and we've discovered that Foxy lived in Saudi Arabia and America.
Yes.
I believe.
Correct us if this is wrong, because we will fire that research.
And Owl, you're from Iceland.
Yes.
How would you say the UK compares to these countries in the treatment of trans people, both like socially and politically?
Wow, that's a very good question. So.
Thank you. We'll congratulate the research team.
I mean, for living in Saudi Arabia has its issues. I think it's very, although things are getting better, like women can drive now, for example.
Oh,
yeah.
Women can drive. Yes,
we made it.
I know. But obviously, there's a long way to go. I mean,
yeah.
I'm chatting to a few trans people that are out in Saudi Arabia, and again, I just think it's about it. You know, there's obviously a thriving LGBT community wherever, but it just depends how underground it is. So
yeah.
There is support for people out there, and you know, the internet still works as well in certain places, so you can still have access. But I think because I left Saudi Arabia when I was just about hitting puberty,
okay.
That was probably a good time for me to exit.
Yeah. Fun to stay,
totally. But Iceland's a really different story, isn't it? Things are actually quite progressive there.
Yeah, I was actually quite shocked when I came to UK about how vicious the media is and
yeah.
how much the media gets away with, because
yeah.
a lot of the things in the media in the UK is simply untrue.
Yeah.
Like, there's just a lot of misinformation and a lot of inaccuracies on mainstream platforms.
Yeah.
And, you know, it does happen in Iceland, of course, that the media isn't great, but there isn't the same level of misinformation and the same level of viciousness
yeah,
and
like
vile
sort of
people and slanderous
yeah.
things. And it's just like, it doesn't quite go to that level in Iceland. And when I started coming out in Iceland, I started going on the news and radio and whatever, it was always quite a pleasant experience.
Yeah.
Like, people would maybe challenge me and they would ask me stupid questions or difficult things, but I would just address it and that would be it. Like, it never became an argument. People never, you know, started screaming at me on TV or saying that they're going to identify as an elephant or whatever.
Calm down.
When I go to Iceland, it's a completely different experience. Even though, of course, Iceland has its issues,
yeah.
like any other country.
Does, yeah.
But it's just a completely different environment. And I feel like the access to the conversation is so much easier and you can raise awareness much more easier as
yeah.
opposed to in the UK, if you want to raise awareness of something, it just gets lost in a sea of craziness in the media.
Yeah, it's just
really sad.
Talk a little bit about the legislation that has just gone through, because that's quite exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we had a legislation last year that was passed, and it was basically about people being able to choose their own name and gender without having to undergo any sort of medical treatment.
Okay.
The medical treatment becoming a bit more based on your own sort of informed consent, so you don't need a diagnosis of gender dysphoria or anything or whatever they want to call it. You just sort of access the healthcare based on your needs, and you tell them, I'm trans and I want access to this, and they just give you all the information to make sure you know what you're getting into, but they don't have the ability to stop you from accessing.
Is it public healthcare?
It's public healthcare.
Oh, that's amazing.
Which makes it so absurd that in the UK everybody's like scared that the whole world's going to fall if we, you know, do these law changes in the UK.
Access the treatment.
Whereas there's already 10 to 15 countries in the world which have legislations that are much more progressive than
and it's
today.
Never been abused.
And it's, these rules have never been abused by anyone. So.
Who'd have thought? Each question we get to a point where I'm like starting to get angry. Move on. Okay, cool. Okay, cool. You guys are both super creative. So who inspires you?
Oh wow, that's great.
Say each other.
Well, aside from each other. There's one person who inspires me in my writing, and their name is Juno Roche, and they write, they wrote the book Queer Sex, which we spoke about earlier,
and they write a lot of books about
trans issues.
Trans Power is the latest one.
Yeah, and they are just an amazing writer. They're in their 50s, and they talk a lot about being trans and being HIV positive, they work a lot on sexual health,
yeah.
And they're just one of the most amazing people I've ever met. And I kind of see myself in them, and I think they see me in, you know, it's just like, it's
that is inspiration, and it's
yeah. And we have a really, really good, relationship, and I've just been inspired to continue writing, and they've really helped me and really sort of given me the confidence to write more. Really.
Did they inspire you before you met, or did you let me?
I met them in the UK when I came here.
Okay.
So I hadn't heard about them before, but I met them at an event in the UK.
Okay.
And we just hit it off immediately.
I think there's a lot of really inspiring people out there at the moment. I think we're kind of almost spoiled for choice. People like Travis Alabanza are amazing.
Yeah, I've seen Travis.
Yeah. Travis is really cool. And there's a guy that I haven't met up with recently because his health isn't so good, but for the past 8 or 9 years, I've been meeting up with a stealth trans guy who really inspires me as well. And he kind of came out of the woodwork after I did this series that I told you about, My Trans Summer. And it was just an incredible meeting because his best friend, Alice, had just died in his living room. And Alice was trans as well. She was in her 80s. And she'd just died, and he just felt all alone because he didn't know any other trans people. He just lost contact with all these other people. So, and then he turned on the television and he watched this, you know, this series about these young trans people, and he contacted a lot of the people from the show, I think. But I think people were quite overwhelmed with what was going on at the time. So I contacted him. We met up at various Wetherspoons. So, you know, nice. All the great things that happened there. So, you know, we'd have like a curry and have a pint and just sit there and chat about things. And I just really, really felt for him because he really grew up in such a different time. You know, and I think it's really important to have that perspective because although, you know, we've been talking about waiting times today and talking about all sorts of different things that are difficult for trans people, but, you know, we're really standing on the shoulders of giants, and these people have just paved the way.
Mm-hmm.
And they were surviving in a time where
a
lot of people around them just didn't make it, for various reasons.
It's that classic, like, we've come a long way, but we've got a long way to go.
Yeah, that's it.
I think we met at uni, and we became friends before either of us knew the other one was trans.
Isn't that funny how you can't find each other?
Yeah, gravitate.
Yeah, we called it because we didn't want people. We had like a code. Uh-huh. So I came out to Satch in Burger King after a night out.
The Burger King story wasn't a joke.
That's real life. But we used to call it Burger King issues. Like, oh, I'm gonna have Burger King issues. Like, we'd be feeling like dysphoric or, you know.
Right.
So,
but I don't know where either of us would be if we didn't. And that's partly why we started doing this.
Yeah, I didn't think I would have come out, or I would have, you know, I wouldn't be here, you know. It would have been that bad, I feel like, if I wouldn't have been able to come out. And as you say, like, it's these like sort of giants that were before us. Like, like people watching people on like YouTube videos was so important, like prevalent to me.
Oh my goodness, YouTube!
Otherwise,
thank God for YouTube, honestly, because it was the same for me as well. I mean, before I came out, I would just like feast on these videos and just like I'd bawl my eyes out. Oh, such brave, incredible people, blah blah. And then eventually, I was like, oh, this is me.
Yeah, you know?
It's so incredible, isn't it? It's funny how in denial you can be sometimes.
I feel like that's happening for us now, seeing you guys on YouTube, and now we're here chatting to you. It's like it's the same thing. Like,
I'm Pierce, and you're Susanna.
I will take them as genuine. As long as I don't have to be Pierce Morgan.
Except
I
hope
you elected to be Pierce.
Yeah, and I was like, except
to change
it. Of course, to be a woman and Pierce.
Literally, yes.
No, I don't want it.
Oh my god. Okay.
You know, after we did that interview with Piers Morgan, Susanna Reid nicked the loo after, you know, while the break of the ads were on. And we were just leaving and she came out of the loo and she said, look, she said, you think you have it bad? She said, I have to deal with them every fucking day.
That's just made me fancy Susanna even more.
I love that.
Like,
when we watched the video back,
we're like, Susanna.
Like, honestly, like, I was just like, look at Susanna, she just hates them.
And then we look at Al's face whilst talking to me.
Yeah.
Just like,
how do you exist?
Anyway, move on from here.
Next question. So, tell us the story of how you started Trans Pride.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't just me that started Trans Pride. I'm a co-founder. So there was about six or so of us. And it got to about 2 months before the Trans Pride was actually the Trans Pride, before Trans Pride was going to happen. But because it was actually started by someone who ended up leaving Brighton. So they kind of dropped they were like, let's do this event, drop the ball. And then we were like, oh, well, that sounds like a really great idea. So pick that ball up. And we were like, we don't know how to do this, you know, this big event. So we had no idea how many people were going to show up. And the first year, we didn't even have a march. We just had a park event. So there was an unofficial march where people walked up St. James's Street, but they didn't stop traffic or anything like that. We managed to pull it off because we had help and support from people in the council, and they managed they did all the paperwork for us to make sure that we could, you know,
amazing,
do an official event. And I think we had over 1,000 people come to the park that year, and that to us felt really, really special. And then it's just grown since then. I mean,
yeah,
it depends. Although the weather does affect things, so we, you know, if there is a year, it seems like every 2 years or so there is rubbish weather, so it affects the amount of people that attend. But last year I think we had over 8,000 people on our march that went all the way along the seafront. It's quite a long march actually. In the park I think we had
over
10,000 unique visitors. Which is
I was one of them as well.
It's a beautiful event, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
I'm so
it's old school
proud.
It's not commercial, it's just people getting together
with heart and soul. They say it's how things used to feel for people, you know, for big pride back in the day in the 90s.
Commercial sponsored by Barclays.
What they call Brighton Pride now. It's just a gay themed corporate party.
It's a different animal, isn't it? I can understand why Brighton Pride has grown to such an extent, and obviously it does filter back. There is funding via the Rainbow Fund that goes back to the groups that really need it, like the Claire Project, which is a trans support group. And we've had some money from them before as well to make films. So, you know, we are grateful, although, you know, I feel like Brighton Pride...
there could be some changes.
Especially if you think about, like, in Reykjavik, for example. Do you want to explain the...
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like this isn't a problem just with Brighton Pride. It's like a problem with pride in general.
Okay.
Like, it's gone so corporate and capitalistic that it's almost... You can't really... see what's the purpose anymore sometimes, even though it will always be there and people will always go to these prides because they are amazing. But for example, in Iceland there's no advertisement allowed in the parade whatsoever.
Okay.
So there's no corporations, only community groups that go in the parade, and it's a much more grassroots based event.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the type of pride that I want to go to and the kind of pride I want to keep going. But I just feel like, you know, prides all over the world have gone a bit too far. It's difficult for them to go back now because they're so dependent on the money to be able to put on these big events.
Which goes to charities and stuff.
There's like
pros and
there's pros and cons.
Yeah,
they're all intermingled.
Can we
yeah.
come with you to Reykjavik?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes,
please.
I mean, are we invited?
Of course.
Okay. That's
we can't bring our promo
behind us.
No, you're bad.
You're
bad.
Amazing.
Okay. Cool. Next question.
Okay. Yeah. So this is something I just really, really wanted to know. So the first time I went to Trans Prime a couple of years ago. I went with Kit Redstone,
yes.
you know,
yeah,
make it.
Okay.
Yeah, amazing playwright, check
yeah.
him out. And that's where his girlfriend, Eva, or his wife, told me about TERFs. I'd never heard of TERFs.
Oh, I
before.
See, so you first heard the word.
Yeah, and Eva told me off. Eva was like, Satch, this is what's going on, you need to know about this. She was so right. Like,
totally. So to explain what a TERF is, it stands for Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminist.
Yes.
And to be honest, if someone's a feminist and they're excluding women, they're not a feminist. But
yeah, it's like a... paradoxical.
It's a
yeah.
Well, my question is, how would you say we can best tackle this?
Tackle the TERFs.
I think the best way is to not engage with these people
yeah.
because these people do a pretty good job of making themselves seem ridiculous.
Yeah.
So the more we engage with them, the more we engage with them, the more we sink down to that level. So, for example, Twitter is one of the biggest platforms where they sort of. You know, where
yeah.
they sort of organize and where they sort of go for things. And in my experience, completely kind of ignoring them and just doing your own thing.
Yeah.
And being a trans person, doing your thing, getting the message out there is much more useful.
Living your best
yeah.
life.
Living your
yeah.
best life is much more useful than engaging into these
yeah.
conversations because you get just sucked into the toxicity.
Yeah. It's exhausting.
It's
I heard these guys were like upskirting trans women and then filming their reactions trying to prove that they were aggressive and
yeah.
stuff. Just like
so
horrible
twisted.
Shit. Like,
they just go, they just use the same tactics used against them, you know? They just use really misogynistic
yeah.
and violent ways to try to prove their point. And you're like, you're not making a point, honey. I don't think you're making the point you think you're making.
No,
it's
being
yeah.
a fucking moron.
I think the important thing is to work on the movable middle. So there's a large amount of people that are like on the fence. They don't fully understand trans issues, but if they had all the information, then they would be like, oh, okay, light bulb moment.
Yeah.
Get it. Yeah.
And it's just about getting those authentic stories out there and having
yeah.
people tell their stories because that's the most powerful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's why we set up My Generation, which is an ongoing film project and other stuff too, but mostly film. And you know, we did it so that people could just see what trans people are like, and we have such a broad community and such a wide range of people
yeah.
that have all sorts of other things going for them other than being trans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, you know, having overcome the obstacles in their life makes them incredible, incredibly interesting people.
Yeah.
You know? So. That's what we do. I just try and blinker sometimes and just try and forget about those TERFs. And,
yeah.
you know,
I mean, I don't even
yeah.
use that word because I just think it's so ridiculous to even legitimize them.
Yeah.
Like that.
Bigots.
I just
yeah.
call them
yeah.
bigots or transphobic people because
and
that's what they are.
Yeah,
like,
they're bullies.
These are such, such better arguments and you guys rise above it. So I'm just like, you're a fucking moron. It's like that. And you're like, yeah, no, let's not legitimize
yeah.
You need to teach me. Cool.
Next question.
Question eight. We are smashing
question
three.
Eight. So do you guys ever get mistaken for like a cis hetero couple? And if so, how do you feel about that? Because, you know.
Yeah.
Because you
I mean all the time.
Also,
like
yeah.
most of my experience is that when people see me, they always perceive me as a straight woman or a straight cis woman. So
mm-hmm.
when we walk down the street, for people who don't know who we are, it's, you know, no one's going to think anything else.
No, yeah, of course.
And, you know, often people will ask us, like, I once went to a conference and someone stood out cis and they started asking me if I had some, if I had tampons. And I was just like, no, I don't have tampons. So it's like, my lived experience is that most people assume I'm cis.
Yeah. And you know, it's kind of weird because I feel like we're pretty out there with, you know, we're out, basically, and we're out there doing things and we're activists and we're showing up at stuff and you know, totally open about being trans. But then there's also that kind of nice feeling of just being able to get on in life and
yeah.
not, you know, not
so it doesn't make you feel invalidated.
I mean, sometimes maybe, because I feel like my identity as a queer person is quite important. And for example,
yeah.
we went to go see my sister in the West Country, went to a garden center because they allow kids there and she's a kid and blah, blah. But there were queer people there and I thought, oh, queer people. And I thought, oh, they don't recognize that I'm queer. So,
It's like you want to be able to recognize your own people,
but
you also don't want to be harassed for being visibly queer, and that's, so there's always a downside to it. And I mean, we have the privilege of being,
it's a privilege,
it's a privilege to be able to go through the world largely without people realizing that you're queer, because people treat queer people worse,
for sure, definitely.
It's a funny one, isn't it?
It is. We're all like, that's really funny, okay. You guys famously took on Piers Morgan, which we have touched on a little bit, on Good Morning Britain.
Who?
Sorry, I don't want to legitimise. So we watched the video over the weekend, and we got the rage watching it. Leo was hungover, I was there, my fiance was there as well, and we were raging, and we watched a response video as well. I don't know how you guys kept calm, because we didn't keep calm.
No.
But what was the response like on social media?
Well, first of all, we made a pact with each other before we went on that he wouldn't get a rise out of us. So that was intended.
You did so well. Because he got a rise out of us.
We knew he was going to try to do it. We knew he was going in for it, and he was going to say outrageous things.
Yeah.
He was going to try to make us argue with him.
What was he like off camera?
Off camera, he was like someone's dad or someone's uncle, do you know what I mean? Like, when we arrived on the couch, it wasn't rolling yet, and he was just on his phone checking Twitter, and he kind of like raised his head He raised it slightly, he said, "Oh, you blocked me, Fox, on Twitter." And I didn't realise, but I was connected to one of these like mass blockers of people are transphobic. He's on a list somewhere.
He's on a list, basically a few of them,
It's called like Turf Blocker or something. Anyway, and so I was like, "Oh, I didn't realise that," so that kind of threw me. And then I just didn't really know what to say, so I said, "Oh, do you have kids, Piers?" He didn't look up, and he just went, "Oh, yeah, did he say three kids?"
Like three or four.
He said, "Yeah, I've got three kids, and they all define as expensive." He said that, and I was just like, So he knows exactly what he's doing, and then and then afterwards, after the interview, everybody, you left really quickly. Susanna nipped to the loo, and it was just me and Piers, and it was only meant to be a 4-minute segment, so they turned it into 15 minutes, which is just insane. But time's a funny thing; we had no idea it was actually going on for that long while we were there.
Yeah, and I think because he made such a great job of looking like an imbecile on TV, people really sympathised with us. Because people just saw it. These are just people who are being genuine, trying to talk about something. And here's this guy screaming at them hysterically and saying outrageous things. And he's not trying to have a conversation.
No.
So that's why I think a lot of people recognised it. Even though they might not have fully understood non-binary issues, they really sympathised with us.
Yeah, I had a theory for, it probably lasted about 10 minutes, that he was a raging liberal and he was just acting like a complete prick to highlight these things in society, and then I gave up on that.
Did you know he's from Brighton?
No.
What?
Hey. Ow. No, yeah.
He's just... Oh.
Hey, up.
Cool. Last question then. So, in recent weeks, there has been transphobic tweets from J.K. Rowling and
who?
Graham Lynham as well. Who?
Yes.
I think he wrote Father Ted or something like that. But I actually saw Kit tweeted a picture of them holding a banner up saying "We love transphobia." And stuff like that. So I guess this follows on from the last question. This is all on social media, right? So you guys have been through it. What is the best way to deal with all that stuff as trans people? Which is a really tough question.
It's a really tough question. I think it depends entirely on the person.
Yeah.
So we both have very different methods of dealing with people online. So my one, because I'm really sensitive, is I look at it, I block the person, I might do a screen grab, and then I'll move on with my life.
Yeah.
So I block, but you don't block people generally.
No, generally I either just ignore them. I don't engage with people necessarily, so I kind of engage indirectly if I do. So I would maybe take a screenshot of something and then post about it. Like, I would never give them...
With them. Yeah,
I'll write an article where I mention things, but I don't like to directly engage or react immediately.
To give them the kind of...
Because that just adds to the fire,
the
and then I'm a few, you know, yeah.
And
they just and
they
get more attention
sometimes.
From it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's all they want.
That's like what
Graham Lynham is, for example, a really, really bizarre individual because he has no expertise or any experience with trans issues whatsoever.
Yet he still has a platform.
And all of a sudden, he's being a voice of authority on trans issues.
Well, I'd never heard of him before that, and now he's getting oxygen from it.
Maybe like they're doing it to sort of build their fame in a way, because if that's what their career
is based
on. It's
almost to stay relevant,
somehow,
I feel like.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And I think this is an underlying issue with trans stuff in general. Like, anybody who has a bad opinion or a negative opinion about trans people all of a sudden becomes a voice of authority in the media.
Yeah.
Regardless of their expertise or any sort of relation to it. As long as they have something negative to say, the media is like, great, we'll have you on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's almost like these people don't realize that they're probably just also being used by the media to create this conflict.
Yeah.
And they're just going to look back on this and they're going to hate themselves.
Well,
because it's ridiculous.
I remember trying to, I thought I could educate, I think it was probably after your guys' day on Good Morning Britain, I thought, oh, I can educate some people here, like, I can just trigger some empathy in them, and I screenshotted some stuff, that I'll show you after, because I don't want to give them the air, but yeah, I gave up after that, and I think it's like you say, the more we just go and live in our best lives.
Yeah,
and
that's it.
Yeah, and you can counter these messages. You know, for example, when they're saying, oh, you know, you're abusing children. What I do is I write articles about trans kids and I show people, look, here are great trans kids and they're doing great.
Just meet a negative and positive.
So I don't like engage with that directly, but I do engage with it by putting the positive message out there instead.
And on that positive note,
yeah.
I think that was more like about 50 questions because we got overexcited. But thank you so much, guys, for
cheers,
coming
man.
On.
Yeah,
thanks
for being on here.
Yeah, I mean, and this guy for coming on. So, speaking of wanting attention, but that was our 10 Qs over tea.
Cheers, guys.
So,
cheers. Thank you.
So, yeah, we'll put all links in the description. Follow these guys, and
Cheers.
Go for another beer.
Yeah.
I mean tea. Over and out.